Welcome back.
Oh.
What song is that from?
Welcome back, Cotter.
Cotter, yeah. Okay.
Mr. Cat Tear.
We say that way more than we should.
For being born in the 80s.
Yeah.
Because wasn't Welcome Back, Cotter 70s?
I think so, but I watched it on Nick at Night.
Oh, totally.
Totally.
With like the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour.
Oh, yes.
And Green Acres.
Oh my God, I loved Green Acres.
Heck yes. And Petticoat Junction. Okay, I'm done.
Oh my God, I loved Petticoat Junction.
Sure you did. Yeah.
Yeah. But now Nick at Night is shows we watched.
Friends.
Friends!
Friends.
Of all shows, Friends. That's timeless.
And it's just not Nick at Night appropriate. I think it should be playing on all channels at all times.
Yeah, like the TBS thing I get. But Nick at Night?
That's just offensive?
A little, yeah. Not nice. All right, so let's talk about Snapped, though.
Okay.
Season 2, episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
Plowing on through them.
Right, the narrator does not get any better, but that's fine.
She really doesn't. It's not her fault. I feel like it's the writer's fault.
Well, they went in a different direction, and I think that's obvious.
Yeah, I feel like they've put her into a box. And I don't like the box.
Well, and maybe she doesn't like the box.
I bet she doesn't like the box. I bet she's, like, got a lot of personality. But, you know, I think the first season, she had a lot of pizzazz. And maybe they were like, eh. Because it was, like, early on in the murder shows like this, I feel like. Sure. So then they were like, let's tone it down. And then, does Sharon Martin take over in season 3?
We'll have to see.
That early?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So, anyway, she's not our favorite, but
it is what it is.
You know, bless her heart.
It was February 5th, 2002, a quiet Tuesday in the San Joaquin Valley. Farm workers were clearing weeds in a vineyard when they saw it. A human arm. Before long, the hillside was swarming with cops. Deputies soon uncovered the rest of the body of a middle-aged man, badly decomposed.
A terrible feeling went over me.
It was Larry McNabney, the husband of flamboyant socialite Elisa McNabney. He had disappeared a few months earlier. With the gruesome discovery of his body, one mystery had been solved, but another was just beginning.
I don't love the last name McNabney. It's too wordy.
It's very wordy. It's like Winchesterton Fieldville.
Exactly. It's like a Destiny's Child meets Jason Mraz nightmare.
Oh, gosh. Or with a little Ed Sheeran mixed in. He's wordy, isn't
he's
he?
He's very wordy, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so they're farm workers. They are working.
Sure.
As farm workers do. And they uncovered a human arm.
Not a good day on the farm.
I would say not. They soon uncovered the rest of the body, unfortunately. It was the body of Larry McNabney, husband of charismatic socialite Elisa McNabney. Here's another thing I don't like about season 2, and I'm sorry to just be down on it all the time, but like in the first season, they did a little bit of like, okay, we had usually the discovery in the beginning or a 911 call or whatever it is. And then she would kind of come in and be like, you know, lies, greed, and lesbian murder. Love triangle, yeah. Next on Snapped. But this is just like, they found his body. It was the body of Elisa McNabney. And then it was like...
No, it was not the body of Elisa McNabney.
Oh, I'm sorry. The husband of Elisa McNabney. And then just like, intro music, start the episode. It felt very abrupt.
It's jarring, yes. Again, you could get straight up whiplash from something like this.
I did.
I know you did.
I had to take an ibuprofen. My purse ibuprofen, no less.
You want to save, hang on to those.
I know. I need those for emergency situations. Elisa grew up in a middle-class family in Brooksville, Florida. She was a bright, adventurous child with a love for horses.
Same girl.
Yeah, I bet all of her passwords were cool horses.
I almost changed my Instagram name to cool horses yesterday. But I settled for my bio being
proud owner of Grand Champions.
Hey, they're the most beautiful horses in the world.
They are.
Confessions of a former horse girl.
Yeah, because we had no horses. We didn't grow up around horses. We just had loads of Grand Champions.
You played with them too.
I did. I played with the Appaloosa. I thought she was dainty.
Yeah, guess what Torella named her? Lucy. Wow.
I've never claimed to be the most creative person in the world.
Anyway, love for horses, go.
All right. She was a cheerleader at Hernando High School. She was popular, smart. She had an IQ of 140. They test her. They always talk about IQs. I'm like, did you test her?
Ballpark. She was real smart, so she had to have been something like this.
Super smart. She was at the top of her class. She was, well, she craved adventure more than education. So when she graduated in June of 1983, she went straight to Las Vegas. I guess you could call that a craving for adventure.
Well, it's pretty adventurous going from, like, the town that you grew up in to across the country.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But then, like, the detective that we meet, Debbie Scheffel, was like, she was a party girl. She just wanted to have a good time. She wanted to go party, party, party.
Yeah, if by adventurous you mean party animal.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, if you don't know anybody, I mean, that is adventurous. Sure.
It is. I feel like, again, and I hate to use... No, I don't hate to use this. I'm going to use it all day long because it's relevant. Reba McEntire's, is there life out there? And I feel like Elisa was Reba McEntire'd of not knowing what else was out there.
That's true. She was Reba McEntire'd of not living in Vegas.
Exactly.
So she changed it. She was... Okay, so they said she surrounded herself with, like, all these fun, super fun people, all these things, whatever... And then...
She was just having fun, hanging out fun people, just fun, fun.
Everything's fun. Then she walks into, strolls into, nay, strolls into Larry McNabney's successful law firm in Vegas. By this point, she's 29. They make it sound like she moved there when she was 18, maybe. I mean, I don't know. It was a hot July day in 1995, and she strolled into the office and said... I'm going to work for you and run your office. And Larry said, you got the job.
Yeah.
They don't say if he's hiring. Like, did she walk in there like, I was passing by and I needed to use the restroom?
Or did she see the help wanted sign?
Yeah, was there like a help wanted sign? But he hired her on the spot.
Yeah.
And they said she was just accustomed to getting whatever she wanted.
Yes. And his daughter, Tavia Williams... Larry's daughter said,
he said, Tavia, you will be so impressed with her. She's brilliant. She's so bright and handles things. It's a load off my back.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tavia is around the same age as Elisa.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think she worked in the office. He was just telling her about it, I guess. But I think she knew a lot about, like, how the office was run and stuff like that. Because by this point, she's an adult. Like, yeah, she's not like a teenager. But Larry was 17 years older than Elisa. He'd been married 4 times. 6 months after they met, he married Elisa, and she was his 5th wife. And everybody said that, like, she was a really good person. She was really good to her friend. She was super energetic. Fun. I mean, I can't stress it enough. She was fun. Fun, 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 fun.
Mm-hmm.
All fun all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And then she married Larry. And then Tavia said that basically she never got to talk to her dad again after that. So from Tavia's perspective, this isn't a great marriage. There's something going on here. She's isolating Larry. But all of his friends, like we talked to a guy, Evan Reese. Is this the guy with the cowboy hat on?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He was, okay, the way he said it, to quote him, he said, she was a very, very nice lady, very, very attractive. They seemed like they were very, very much in love. He said very, very for everything.
For everything.
It was so funny. It was like, very, very, very.
Very, very, very.
Every morning, they would drive out of their luxury neighborhood in Elisa's new Jaguar and go to work together. They ate out all the time. They got expensive bottles of wine.
Because Larry loved wine.
Yeah. And he only wanted the best for Elisa.
Sure.
So, would, like, go to these fancy, dimly lit restaurants.
Giggle and hold hands and play footsie under the table.
Yeah. And, like, everybody said it seemed like a fairy tale romance for them.
They were, like, very, very happy.
They were very, very in love. They were very, very cute. They were very, very drinking wine. So, like, all their friends were very, very excited for them. And Tavia was very, very not.
Right.
Because she's
like... She saw right through it.
Yeah, she totally saw right through it. That's a thing, like on a lot of these episodes, because this has happened in a lot of them, where this younger woman comes in, marries an older man who has a lot of money.
And a lot of children.
And a lot of children. And the daughters are immediately like, this is not right. Because, I mean, they see what's going on.
Yeah, and the dad is like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was too busy checking out my wife's nice rack. I didn't hear what you were saying.
Exactly. It's like, I know, they're like kind of putty in these women's hands, unfortunately.
Beer flavored nipples, man.
Totally. But Elisa like literally didn't care. It did not bother her that Tavia didn't get along with her. This was kind of funny. The narrator said, Elisa didn't have time to worry about her stepkid. She had shopping to do with Larry's credit cards. So she's just very busy, very, very busy shopping.
Yes.
She was pretty much obsessed with shopping.
And again, same girl.
Well, yeah, but Evan said that one time he and Larry had gone golfing, and while they were gone, Elisa had come home, like I guess when they got home or whatever, Elisa had gone out shopping, and she bought him 3 pairs of sunglasses, which like, why do you need 3? Probably the one will suffice.
Well, maybe. Yeah, you only have 2 eyeballs, right?
Yeah, most people. Mm-hmm. But okay, so maybe even if you get 2 because you get a backup pair. They were $400 a piece. She spent $1,200 on sunglasses.
I feel like it reminds me of the movie Arthur with Dudley Moore. And he goes to the, I guess it's like Bloomingdale's or something. And he's mad, so mad at his dad. And he's talking to Hobson and he's like, I'm so mad at dad. And he's like, okay, well then buy some more stuff. And he's like, buy 6 of those. And he's just like, whatever he sees, he's like, I'll take 4 of those, 19 of these, 12 of those. And that's Elisa.
Yeah, that's exactly what she's doing. It's ridiculous. $400 a piece. Oh my gosh. I have to put so much thought into, I mean, we've talked about this before, like even something as small as like, do I need the side of queso? Like, you know, whatever. And it's like, yeah, I'll take 3 of those pairs of sunglasses at $400 a piece. My gosh.
If I was smart, I could do some math on that. I'm going to say that's around, what,
$1,200? It's exactly $1,200.
Yes. Well, I mean, tax, you know, we can't know.
Well, I don't know about the tax. That's right. I don't know the tax laws there. But she also had, she had expensive taste in everything, including sports.
It's funny to me because from where she came from, it seems like she wasn't brought up in this, like, super wealthy community or, like, lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
But she has such a champagne taste.
Oh, yeah, for
and
sure.
So it's like, I mean, I don't know. I'm not into sports at all.
No.
But I definitely wouldn't be like, oh, let's go to steeplechase. That's something that I'm really into.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
But she's putting on this facade. She wants to run in these circles. She knows that people who are going to these kinds of horse shows are going to have a lot of money because horses are very expensive. And that's why she has to manipulate men into giving her everything that she wants because she's a taker.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, yeah, she gets Larry into her favorite sport, which is quarter horse shows. And Larry apparently fell for it immediately. And he said, this is Evan kind of reminiscing or whatever. He's like, yeah, Larry used to say, a horse show is nothing but a big party with a bunch of horses. And we'd just laugh and laugh.
Like, okay, is it...
Hilarious joke.
I know. I'm like, isn't like when you're... I don't know. I just imagine when you're rich, everything you do is just a big party with whatever you're doing there. Like,
yeah, that's... right?
Woo, I'm rich. Yeah. I don't worry about anything.
We're raising money for this art gallery. Yeah. And you just get hammered drunk.
It's a party with art there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Elisa and Larry get their own stables, which is super, super expensive. They're buying and showing horses, but money was not a problem for Larry. Evan said that Larry always had at least $3,000 to $4,000 in his money clip.
That is dangerous.
It is dangerous, you would think. He had a lucrative law office, a stable with expensive quarter horses. They had his and her Jaguars. They had the world by the tail.
Hmm.
That's like an image. You know, you're like grabbing a tail. I just see like an animal scooping their hips underneath because you're like, ooh,
don't get me there. I don't like that.
That's all I can think about.
Yes.
But then in December of 1995, okay, I wish we could, we needed to create a bingo for this one because we need like an audit of the books or like bookkeepers gone bad or something like that. Because
it happens a lot.
I know. They do an audit of the firm's books in 1995 and guess how much money was missing?
$140,000.
How did you know that?
I have no idea.
That's a great guess. That had disappeared from a trust account, and suddenly the law firm, which had always been super lucrative, was now in big fat trouble.
I could not believe that. So Charles Bauer, who was an attorney, he said a fiduciary duty, which as everyone knows.
That was like, what are you saying?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, that's not even a real word.
Yeah.
Charles. Yes. A fiduciary duty is an obligation to act in the best interest of another party. And he says a fiduciary duty you owe to your clients is the highest duty that an attorney has. And Larry had to pay the money back out of his own pocket, but that was not the worst part. The Nevada Bar Association revoked his license and he could no longer practice law in that state.
That's huge.
That's very big.
That's their entire livelihood. And so now they have to move to California. Here's the thing. We all know Elisa stole that money, right? I mean, that's not a secret, I don't think.
Right.
Does Larry know? I mean, he's got to know she's the one that stole it, right? He's not mad. He's lost his license. Like, I don't know. It's just maybe he didn't know, but maybe she was able to kind of hide that just long enough or something. But
well, that was the day that she wore her crotchless
panties.
I was going to go for like crotchless riding breeches.
Oh.
Because of the horses.
Right. I think in Britain, they call it jodhpurs.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I think. I don't know. They use that a lot in Belinda Blinked, and I don't know what it means. But they talk about it with horses.
But why don't they have crotchless jodhpurs then?
Surely they do. Yeah. Surely.
Anyway, that's what she did. He was like, where did this money go? And she's like, oh, wait, hang on a second. I have something new. And then she goes and puts on something that is covering nothing.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, have I mentioned that I have boobs? Yeah. Can you talk about that?
And I would like for you to see them.
Yeah, exactly. They moved into an exclusive development called Woodbridge just outside of Sacramento. And he started a new law practice there. And it was just as successful as his last. Which is pretty incredible that they were able to just literally pick up and move. He had enough money in the bank, I guess, and they just started over and it just went like...
It killed it immediately.
Yeah, that's insane.
Mm-hmm. He's a very... It was a very good businessman, obviously.
Definitely. David Spencer, private investigator, said that Larry was a good lawyer. Anytime you knew you were going up against Larry, you knew you'd be dealing with someone who knew the case. So he was...
Very well-versed in what he was doing, right? Yeah, did a lot of research on it.
He won cases.
Yes.
Elisa was the office manager again, of course. And as the business grew, she hired a college student named Sarah Dutra to help her with the chores. So by this point, she's like, what, in her 30s, I guess?
Mm-hmm. She's basically elderly.
There's no point in her living anymore.
Exactly. Take her out back and do what you do to horses.
You are also in your 30s.
I know!
So you can't just do that to me. You're not in your 20s anymore.
I know.
You old biddy. Elisa and Sarah bonded immediately. They were like BFFs for life. It was crazy. They loved... Super expensive shopping trips.
Oh, yeah. They would go to Gucci and spend like $200 to $500 a piece on like just one pair of shoes. And they, so one of the other employees that had worked with Larry, her name is Ginger Miller. I love that her name is Ginger.
She's so cute.
She's so cute. She said that Elisa and Sarah dressed alike. So they, anytime they went shopping together at Gucci, they're like, let's just go ahead and buy two.
Yeah, we're just going to both wear it, so let's just buy two. Like, also, I hate that. Nobody has ever gone shopping and been like, hey, girl, let's buy two of these and, like, always match and wear the same thing everywhere we go.
Well, that's what you do in the seventh grade. I'm just drawing on the TV show Pen 15.
Oh, okay, okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. Elisa and Sarah became inseparable, and...
This is another thing. We should do that on the bingo. Two.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
When a woman, two women become inseparable.
Yeah.
Never fails.
Yeah, because they become like best friends. And then they decide that the husband has to go.
Yeah, then I'm sure here comes Dr. James Murray, and he's like, well, let me mansplain why exactly. Women enjoy hanging out with other women.
You know, women do like to hang out with other women.
With other women, sure.
And those poor ladies need something to look forward to because of their little pea brains. And they can talk to each other about, you know, doing the laundry and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, James. What was his last name again?
Murray, I thought.
Murray, yeah. So they're inseparable. They're going everywhere together. They're doing everything. Larry was becoming a nationally known writer. And so, like, because Evan said he would even, like, get on his horse and his ads or whatever, his commercials for his law practice. So he'd, like, ride his horse around and, like, he had his cowboy hat and all that stuff. And they were like, it wasn't just for show. He wasn't just, like, acting like he was into horses. He was legitimately getting known for being a writer. Like, he was mm-hmm. he was winning tournaments or what are they called?
I have no idea.
Matches, shows. Races, shows? Oh, shows. Okay.
Yes.
Winning shows.
He was winning shows and he was winning cases.
Yeah, he was a winner. And Elisa seemed like she was super supportive. She was always like cheering him on. She never missed a show. She was always there. Even if she was in the middle of shopping, she would like shop till she dropped and then she'd head over there. She'd drop the shop and head over there.
She made time.
She made the time. On September 10th, 2001, Elisa and Larry took Sarah down to Los Angeles for a horse show. The girls spent the morning shopping, then they rushed back to the show to see Larry ride. They were cheering him on as per usual, and then he suddenly collapsed. He couldn't even get up, so they had to take him away in a wheelchair, and they said he looked close to death. And then the narrator says, and as it turned out, he was. I was like, well, that's ominous.
And, right?
Yeah. But nobody could figure out what was wrong with him. Elisa claimed he was too ill to see anyone. So literally the last time anybody ever saw Larry was at that show when he collapsed in front of everybody.
Right.
Elisa whisks him away.
With Sarah.
Yeah. It doesn't appear they go to a doctor. It doesn't appear they go to the hospital. It doesn't appear they do anything. She just takes him back to the house and everybody's coming, trying to come visit him or see him or help. And she's just like, oh, he's too sick to see anybody. Just not right now. You know, we'll get back to it later. Whatever.
Yeah. And so since Larry is too ill to see anybody, he's also too ill to come to work. But have no fear. Elisa can handle this. So she goes into the office. And even though she was not licensed to practice law, she still went ahead and practiced anyway.
Yeah, she did. She like filled out paperwork and I don't know, she just took over his caseload, and one of the other attorneys was like, she actually didn't do a bad job. She'd been around it long enough, and I don't know if he specialized in, I think they said he was a personal injury lawyer,
he was, yeah.
Didn't they? So yeah, so he specialized in a certain type of cases and she kind of just picked up on it, I guess, as time went on. But I don't know. This is who she is though. She's a chameleon. She can literally slip into anything, mm-hmm. you know? Then in mid-September, Elisa hired another office assistant to help her in the office because now she's got a full caseload because she's now a lawyer. So this is where they hire Ginger Miller, who we talked about earlier. Then in October, they had another office temp, and they said this one was special. Her name was Haley Jordan, and she was Elisa's 17-year-old daughter from a previous marriage.
Like, where did she come from?
Everybody was like, she never once mentioned she had a kid. Never to anybody.
Yeah, her friends were like, well, that's very strange that she never said anything, but I guess eventually they got over it.
Yeah. Okay, so Tori likened this to the movie Heartbreakers Sigourney Weaver and Jennifer Love Hewitt, and it so totally is, because it's like, you, like, at first, everybody around doesn't realize that, like, Sigourney Weaver and Jennifer Love Hewitt are even, like, you know, they're not, nobody knows they're related or connected. Yeah. And it's like, then they're like, oh, mother and daughter. It's like so crazy. This is so that movie. After the initial shock wore off and everybody was like, totally didn't know you had a kid, they were all BFFs. So, like, all the office girls were hanging out all the time. They said that, like, they literally would just, like, curl each other's hair in the office all day while everybody else is typing away. They're just like doing each other's hair and makeup. I'm like, that is so unprofessional. And I would be so mad if I'm doing my job and I'm like, You're just sitting there.
Right, like, exactly. Like, that it's not a sleepover, but that's what they were treating it like.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're at work. After a few weeks of seeing no Larry, people questioned where he was and started to wonder if Elisa had something to do with it. And Elisa literally didn't care. She wasn't worried. I mean, it wasn't that he was missing necessarily. She was just saying that he was too sick to see anybody. But
she was like, I'm glad he's not coming to work.
Yeah, she said she was glad that he wasn't around, or that she didn't have to see him all the time, because Ginger said that Elisa told her, I'm tired of being married to an old man. When I make love to him, it makes my skin crawl. He wasn't that old. I mean, he was 17 years older than her, but he wasn't that old.
Well, and guess what? That shouldn't have been. Brand new information to her.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, he didn't age 50 years the day you got married.
Exactly. Like, come on. You knew what you were getting yourself into. Also, he wasn't a bad-looking man, and he seemed like he really cared about her.
Yeah, and he was in good shape, and, you know, yeah. And, like, also, I mean, I've said this before, and I don't know, whatever. If you're going to marry somebody purely for their money, deal with it. That's part of marriage. Like, either you want to marry somebody you're in love with, or you want to use somebody for their money.
And at that point, it's a business transaction, and you can't get something for nothing, so you have to do your part.
Well, and it's marriage. Like, it's what you sign up for. Anybody who gets married, if they completely, like, never have any intimacy, that marriage is not going to last. So,
yeah, it's just how it is.
But Tavia was like, okay, this is weird. Like, if he was sick for, like, a few days, I would get it. It's been weeks. It's turning into, like, months. We're not allowed to see him for his birthday. We're not allowed to see him for anything. Like, nobody's seen him. Nobody's heard about him or heard from him.
Well, yeah, and a month after, or a little over a month after Larry's quote-unquote accident, Elisa comes to wherever. I don't know. Evan said that Elisa announced, I've got the best news of my life. Larry moved to a foreign country and filed for divorce. And Evan's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's like, that's not Larry. That doesn't sound like Larry. Like, he wouldn't just up and leave. He wouldn't just whatever. And also, like, it seemed like you guys were insanely happy until...
Very, very happy.
Very happy until the accident. And then they were... It just got very, very odd,
mm-hmm.
if we're being honest.
Yeah.
In November, 2 months after the accident and disappearance, the children hired a PI to track down their father. But he only found dead ends. Meanwhile, the fun never stopped for Elisa and her staff. They were taking expensive shopping trips to Reno.
Reno again.
Oh, yeah. They're buying new furs, new cars. I'm like, where are you getting this money? This is not your money.
Mm-hmm.
New jewels.
New pearls and things.
Yeah, Ginger said they were getting a little out of control, and she said, I was worried about how frivolously they were spending money. I figured if Larry was in rehab or something, he would be upset at how much money was being spent. Finally, in November 2001, Ginger filed a missing persons report with police, but they weren't very much help. I can't believe Ginger is the one who filed the report.
I know it.
Like,
yeah, and David Spencer was like, it's real hard to go looking for somebody whose wife doesn't report him missing, doesn't really think that he is a missing person.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah, because if the police call and they're like, okay, you know, we're trying to look into this, and she's like, well, he left and he told me he was filing for divorce, they're like, okay, case closed. He's disappeared on purpose. Like,
mm-hmm.
we can't make him stay. He's a grown up. Deputies asked Ginger to keep in touch, but that's all they could really do. Then, just after New Year's 2002, Elisa surprised everyone when she just shut down the law office. Like, Big Fat was like, okay, it's over. She took Sarah on one last shopping trip, though. She bought a red BMW for her friend and a Jaguar convertible for herself. And then Sarah went back to Sacramento State College. Ginger was like, I guess I'll find a new job. And on January 11th, Elisa and her daughter disappeared. Bye.
Elisa may have been gone, but Larry was about to make a comeback.
I just don't like the way they're doing that. Like,
it's like they didn't, the first season had it more right than they do this season.
I think so too. It's like the second season, they were like, maybe we should go a different direction. And I'm like, it's kind of insensitive the way they're saying it. Like, This man has been murdered.
Yeah, that's a lot of the things that I don't like about certain shows on other channels.
Yeah. Yeah. And later they do a lot, you know, they even all this out, but
it's fine with me to be a little sassy like it was in the first season, especially at
Yeah, she was sassy towards the women in the episodes. Not
kind of making fun of like, oh, and here comes Larry again, you know, like,
yeah, here's Larry's big comeback. We found his body in a field. That's horrific. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, yeah,
it's just insensitive.
And, yeah, yeah, I don't like it. I'm glad they changed that, I'll say, I guess. So we know that in February, the farm workers were working.
They were working.
And they found the body. So the deputies come out, and Evan said they found his body approximately 8 miles from his ranch. From Evan's ranch, which is like...
That's so close.
Yes. And he was like, as soon as I heard they found a body, I knew it was Larry. So sad. The body was so badly decomposed that they couldn't tell if it was Larry or not, so they had to contact his family. Tavia said that they got the call on February 6th, and they were asking about some tattoos that Larry had, and the next morning they had a positive match. It was Larry McNabney.
See, and I feel like that could be a good argument for people who are like, why do you get tattoos? Like, to help me out of a jam if I'm ever needed to be identified. Like, it'll help me be identified.
That's
true.
Same
thing with selfies. What was she wearing that day? Oh, she takes a selfie every day.
There you go. Yeah, the next time somebody's like, are you really sure you want all those tattoos? Be like, well, how do you think they're going to identify my body if it's in such a state of decomposition?
Exactly.
But they'll shut right up.
Oh, I know they will.
Yeah. So medical examiners order an autopsy, and they figured out that the grave was new, but Larry had been dead by that point for months. So it seemed like he had then been just moved to that place. He had died from a fatal dose of horse tranquilizer. Why do people use stuff like they obviously have access to or whatever? Like
something that is so on brand for that person.
Exactly. It's like
Elisa, you've always been a horse girl.
Exactly. Your AIM screen name is like, I love horses, 86 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Come on. Evan called the police and told them that once they were at a horse show in Susanville, California, and Elisa said,
Evan, can I ask you something? Can you kill with horse tranquilizer? And I said, kill? I mean, you mean a horse? And she says, no, a person. I just pushed it off thinking, you know, that maybe she was just being funny.
That's weird, but I'm going to chalk it up to just like her asking a weird question and trying to be funny. And the narrator was like, but the cops didn't find it funny at all.
Ugh.
And they didn't.
They did not, no.
Which is good. They needed to find Elisa, though. But nobody had any idea where she was by this point. So police start looking in their database, trying to find out if Elisa had been arrested before. But they're not finding Elisa McNabney anywhere. In any law enforcement database, the name's not coming up. There's literally no record of her existing.
Crazy.
Then, armed with warrants, they searched Elisa and Larry's home and law office. They didn't find anything until they searched one of Larry's horse trailers. In that trailer, they found a letter stuffed into an old legal folder, which is like, they literally went through everything. This is like...
Thank God they did.
I know, because you could have just been like, okay, well, we're going to search like the important places in the home. And how many places can you hide something? Especially in a house, they probably had a huge house, you know? Mm-hmm. So they find this like stuffed into an old legal pad in that horse trailer. And it had the name Lauren Renee Sims Jordan on it. So an FBI computer check spit out a 113-page rap sheet with over 38 aliases with social security numbers.
How do you get that many?
I don't know. That's so much.
Mm-hmm.
Elisa McNamney's real name was Lauren Renee Sims Jordan. And David Spencer, he was the PI, right? Mm-hmm. Or was the attorney? He said that Elisa was one of the better con type people he'd come across, and she used her womanly ways to acquire credit cards, checkbooks, and in some cases, she'd marry the man she was seeing. She'd been married 3 times and was in and out of Florida jails from 1989 to 1992.
See, which brings us back to when they were like, as soon as she graduated high school, she took off to Vegas. I'm like, no, she didn't. Maybe they were just like trying to set it up so it would throw us off and they'd do like an M. Night Shyamalan twist. We're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Because they're like, don't worry about the 15 years in between when she graduated and when she moved to Vegas.
When, like, she went into Larry's.
Yeah, because they definitely made it sound like she graduated high school and then packed up and moved to Vegas.
Exactly.
But she didn't. She was in Florida at least for a few years. When police looked back on the disbarment of Larry, they learned that it was Elisa that stole the $140,000, which was like, duh. So, yeah, exactly. On March 1st, 2002, nearly 6 months after Larry's disappearance, the Sacramento police issued a warrant for Lauren Renee Sims. The warrant stated that she may have changed her appearance and was traveling with her daughter, Haley. A $10,000 reward was offered to anyone who had information leading to her arrest. Then on March 18th, 2002, 3 weeks after the APB went out, Elisa was apprehended in Destin, Florida, and held without bail. One of her daughter's friends turned her in for the reward money. She was like,
her.
Yeah, exactly. She was like, I mean, I'm friends with you, but I like $10,000 a lot more than I like you. So, sorry, girl. The California cops started working on getting her extradited, and the Florida cops started questioning her, but she wouldn't cop to anything. She wouldn't give him any information. She's not saying a word. She claims she had nothing to do with it. And then one morning, she shocked everyone and just like out of nowhere gave a 2 or 3 page handwritten statement saying that she'd murdered Larry, that Sarah Dutra was totally involved.
That is insane to me. Like, where did that even come from?
That's like in that one episode. What was the lady's? I forget her name now. Ruth Ann Barron, where she's like gritting her teeth to the bitter end. And then she was like, never mind, I'll just confess. Like, you got that far. I mean, I guess it's a good thing you're just like going to get it over with. But I don't know. Like, why waste the time?
Yeah. Why work so hard to try to like maintain your innocence and then all of a sudden be like, well, okay.
You got me.
Get it. Yeah, I did it.
So she said that she and Sarah gave Larry horse tranquilizers in his drink in the hotel right before the horse show. After he collapsed in the ring, then they injected him with more. I mean, I don't know. It's just so hateful. Like, every murder is hateful. It's just, he's already, like, in this state, and you're supposed to be the person taking care of him, mm-hmm. and he trusts you, mm-hmm. and he has no idea why he's having this medical episode, and you're putting him in more danger. Exactly. I mean, yeah.
So here comes Dr. James Murray.
Here he comes.
He has to come in. And he says that she chooses tranquilizers to kill him in her own mind. The reason is because in her own mind, it allows her to see it as putting him to sleep, to relax him.
It's like, well, he's just had a rough day. This is the equivalent of me rubbing his feet for him at the end of a hard day.
Giving him a nightcap or something.
Yeah, same. I can't help that he died from it.
Well, that's the thing, though. So he didn't die.
Well, that is the thing, isn't it? So the original plan was to dump him and bury him somewhere between LA and Sacramento in the desert. But when they got to the site to bury him, that's when they realized he wasn't dead. So they bring him back to the house and they let him die there. And for 4 months, while they shopped and partied, Elisa kept his dead body in a garage refrigerator held shut by duct tape. This is disgusting.
How do you sleep at night? How do you continue? Well, but that's the thing. There's no feelings there. There's Mm-mm. no, because all she cares about is like Scrooge McDuck style dollar signs.
Yeah. But you know, she's parking her Jaguar in that garage, mm-hmm. like walking past
right
him.
Next to the body.
Yeah. Every single day, because you know, she's not going to leave that to sit out and get like sun rot or whatever. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to damage the leather.
Right.
But yeah, she's like parking in the, oh my gosh.
What a gross person.
In and out of that house knowing he's there dead. That's horrible.
Yes.
Then in December of 2001, with the money almost all gone, Elisa figured it was time to pack up and move on. So she and Sarah took the body, buried him, and hit the road. She said she chose the San Joaquin Vineyard because he always liked wine. That's like, okay, you can't do that because...
why?
I'll tell you why. Thank you for asking. The way she said it was like, this person died and I spread their ashes in the ocean because they always said that's what they wanted, or because that's where he felt the most alive or the happiest or whatever. That's not what you did. You murdered him.
Stole all of his money.
And how long did it, like, they inject him with these tranquilizers and he doesn't die right away. And so they're like, all right, well, I guess I'll just let him wait it out here at the house. Like, how much did he suffer? Like, how much time did that take? That's horrible.
I can't imagine how agonizing that was. And you're
like, well, he always liked wine, so I buried him in the vineyard. Like, you did him a favor? Mm-mm. That's what he would have always wanted. Ugh, hater.
It's disgusting.
Based on Elisa's confession, they arrested Sarah Dutra as well and charged her with first-degree murder. And on March 31st, 2002, as she was about to be extradited to California, Elisa shocked everyone again. Braiding parts of her pillowcase into a rope, she hooked it to an AC duct and hung herself. She never stood trial for the murder of Larry McNabney.
Now, here comes my favorite part of the entire episode.
Oh, yes.
And it comes in the form of on-screen text. And it says, Elisa left a note in her cell asking her lawyer to sue the jail for not preventing her suicide. When I was watching this and that popped up, I laughed out loud.
I don't know what to say because I'm just like... Who benefits from that? Is it like going to be a settlement her daughter is supposed to get or something? Like, this is her last hurrah of...
Maybe it's just the last, like, jerky move that she could pull.
Like, I just don't know that you can have written in a note, sue them for not preventing my suicide. I don't know. Like, does that... Somehow I feel like that nullifies a payment of any kind. I don't know. It's just like... I mean, they definitely do what they can... if you're on suicide watch and stuff, but I don't know. She's a jerk.
Yeah, big time jerk.
Yeah, she's just trying to, like, give him the finger one more time. I mean, she's a total con person. Like, she literally moved around and married people just to get their money. This, I think, is just the first person she killed for it.
Exactly. So on March 19th, 2003, Sarah Dutra was convicted of voluntary manslaughter and accessory to murder. She received an 11-year prison sentence and is currently in Central California Women's Facility as of the release date of this. Elisa's daughter, Haley, was not involved with the murder and was turned over to her maternal grandparents in Florida for, I guess, like, what, another year since she was 17.
Yeah. I glazed over the fact that she was 17, but they hired her to work in the law office and she's 17. Like, does she have a high school degree? Like, or high school diploma? They just pulled her out of school and were like, come party with us now?
Seemed like it.
That's weird.
I did some digging and Sarah Dutra has been released. She was released in 2011. And yeah, that's the case.
So 8 years of an 11-year sentence. Sounds about right for giving somebody horse tranquilizers, letting him slowly die.
Burying him in...
Sticking him in a refrigerator in the garage.
Right. Then burying him. How did his arm come off also?
Yeah. And then also think about, like, the trauma. Okay, all the people that are affected. His family, obviously. His friends. What about all those people that found his body?
Oh, yeah, they'll never unsee that.
Exactly. Like, there's such a ripple effect. We talk about it a lot in the other show, Killer Queens. Like, there's just such a ripple effect. You're affecting so many different people so that you can buy Gucci shoes. Like, not important.
No, unless you're big timers.
Well, they didn't kill anybody.
They did not kill anybody.
No.
But yeah, this is just, I was just appalled at the underhandedness and, like, the zero cares. Obviously, she is a coward because she didn't even see the trial through. Like, she couldn't handle it.
Yeah, yeah. And just the total disregard for human life. If mm-hmm. she had gone through the trial and had gotten anything other than life in prison without the possibility of parole, as soon as she got out, she'd do this again.
Yes.
You know she would. Because this is the only thing that's important to her. She doesn't value human life. And I don't think Sarah Dutra does either.
It's just money.
Yeah. So I feel like Sarah Dutra is a danger too. I don't like that she's out, but...
Maybe there's a rehabilitation. I don't know.
Maybe.
But that's it.
That's it.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.